photograph, you see, there, if you look at that, it looks a bit formidable, really.
Yes.
Is that right, do you think?
Oh, she had a formidable look. She had quite a serious look, but had a tremendous change in her face when she smiled or laughed. She had a great sense of humour. But had a rather forbidding look, yes. I think it says somewhere there something about the Haddo glare, which is really a bit of Miss Denneke. I mean, Miss Denneke, after all, was a German. And I think, you know, a little heavy book is sometimes what I've always...
Do you, actually? Yes.
I don't... It doesn't get her across to me.
Doesn't it? What doesn't it...
I think it's practical.
Doesn't it convey, really? I mean, what does she miss about your aunt?
Well, it's so long since I've read the book. It's rather difficult to criticise. But I know at the time, one or two people who've read it, who knew her, have the same impression.
Yeah.
Takes her a bit too seriously, in a sense.
Yeah.
I think all the facts are absolutely right, of course. All that part is quite right.
Yeah. It's just the impression of the personality that's...
The personality was so tremendously alive. I mean, she was a person that the moment she came into the room, everything seemed twice as worthwhile and much more exciting. And you couldn't say why. It was just that she was tremendously alive and interested in absolutely everything. Extraordinary person.
Yes, that's absolutely what your sister said. So really, the impression that you get from that photograph is misleading, except that she did look like that in formal situations, but it's just her personality when she knows people, she can really
take off. I think all her photographs are rather serious looking.
Yeah.
Nearly all of them.
She was rather short-sighted, wasn't she?
She was short-sighted, yes. Yes, she had... bad sight, I should think, all her life, really.
Yes.
She had a lovely voice when she was young.
Did she really?
Yes. She wasn't, of course, as musical as my uncle was, anything like
that. Yes, yes.
But she sang a lot when she was young.
Yes.
I think she'd had a hard life, you know, to get where she got, and she took life quite seriously. I mean, there's a very serious side to her.
Yes, well, she had to look after her mother, didn't she? You know,
well, she came back. Everybody thought that was mad, of course.
Yes.
Because
yes.
She had an elder sister there.
Yes.
But the elder sister, who outlived her a long time, Constance Haddo, Cotty Haddo, was clever in her own way, but quite different, not academically at all. And Aunt Grace thought that she wasn't a good enough companion for my grandmother. That was really what it was.
Well, good enough in the sense... In
intellectually.
What sense? I see.
See, my grandmother was a very alive person too, and must have had an extremely good brain, though, of course, she never went to university or anything. She was beyond before that generation. But she taught herself Greek to keep up with my uncle. That sort of thing, you see.
Mm.
And... was extremely on the spot and very interested indeed in both Uncle Harry's and Aunt Grace's work. And I think Aunt Grace felt that if she had nothing but Aunt Cotty all day long, it was going to be extremely down for her when she couldn't get out. But of course, she did a lot of things while she was at home. And she didn't really look after her. I mean, they had help in the house and that sort of thing. And Aunt Cotty ran the house and did the housekeeping and shopping and all that. Aunt Grace started the WI while she was at home, you see.
Yes.
And because she really started WIs before there was any official WI, on the lines of Mrs. Watt, who'd started it in Canada.
That's right, yes.
But it was run, as I think it says in the book, under the war egg, really.
That's right, yes.
It was really meant to get women in homes cooking, not on the land, like they've already got the land army.
Yes.
But this was... And it, while she was in Cirencester, it was a chance to get the people going there and round the villages.
How do you see that? I mean, is it, you see, to me, it's awfully difficult to understand because the whole class setup's completely changed, but is it the local educated family in a society that hasn't got many educated people around taking the lead? Or is it a class thing?
No, she would never have thought of it like that. No, they had absolutely no class worry although of course there was class distinctions in those days, you couldn't help it. But I don't know how to explain that quite. That never entered her head at all, I'm quite certain. Mm. It was just that she knew from a practical point of view that most women weren't educated. They didn't have a chance. Mm. And her one idea was to get them educated at all costs. Mm. And this was a way of starting. You see, my uncle started adult education in the First World War because he was so worried about the Tommies who'd gone to the front and lost a lot of education. And so he started that and put on uniform, went out to the front.
Yes. I mean,
they were both very keen on education. They worked together tremendously, although she was 21 years younger than him.
Of course, it's difficult to remember that.
She was her godfather. He was the eldest and she was the youngest, you see?
Yes, absolutely. So, really, it's a sort of liberal enthusiasm for education rather than a sort of class leadership.
Nothing of that sort. Mm. I think she, after all, they were very Christian-minded. They were brought up, you see, as more Parsons in the family, really. But not only that, it went in very deeply, and it was more that attitude, much more than the class thing, that everybody should have a fair chance about everything.
Yes, because of course there are the clergymen all the way through.
Yes, all the way through, and this ran right through their lives. It was a vocation, in a sense, whatever you did. But not in the way that people look at it nowadays, I don't think. It was just part of life. That you did your best for people around you if you happened to be lucky enough to be better educated. But after all, she taught herself a great deal. I mean, they had no money to educate them.
Well, absolutely, yes.
They won things, you see, to get wherever they got.
Yes, yes.
My grandfather probably taught them at home originally, I should think, because he tutored people, you see.
That's what
he make two ends meet. Yes. He had a lot of students at Talcerne.
Have you got an impression of how they all got on together? That is, Sir Henry and Margaret and Constance and Gerald and Grace and your father. I mean, have you got a feel about that at all?
Well, they were tremendous individuals. I should think they argued like mad. They had a great family sort of tie. I don't know how to explain that quite. They were really very fond of each other underneath. But they would never have all lived together or anything, I don't think. They were so different. Each one of them was a complete individual. Absolutely.
Yes, so they were, in a way, characters, weren't they?
They were characters, great characters.
But not eccentric so
no,
much.
No, not eccentric at all.
As active dynamics.
It was just natural for them.
Mm. Mm.
They just... Can I stop a second?
No, it was just the brothers and sisters, really. They were all individual in some way. That is, they had different interests, did they?
Entirely different interests. I think they were a very, very unusual family for their generation because they had no inhibitions. I mean, my grandmother and grandfather must have been very far-seeing people. I mean, they let them go about. They let them travel abroad whenever they got the chance without any sort of feeling that they should be chaperoned or anything like that.
Mm.
They weren't at all gay socially. They really couldn't afford it and they weren't particularly interested.
But you see, that's one of the things that I felt. I think your sisters felt that the Denikey biography didn't really capture the central importance of the family to Grace.
No. Now, you see, I was Aunt Grace's executor, and when she died, I had the most frightful time, because she had so many different interests, but she kept them all separate. And they all thought she was the only one for them. And it was really awful, you see, the WI thought everything should be done for them. Oxford thought the same. BBC, everybody did. But she kept them all quite separate, and they were all running together perfectly happily as far as she was concerned.
Mm.
But she never mixed them up. And
yet they did fertilise each other.
And therefore, you see, Miss Denikey I think she was at Somerville with her, wasn't she?
Yes,
she was.
She's very much the Oxford side.
Very much the Oxford side, and very much full of all that, and ignored the family. though she herself was more sympathetic towards the family. I mean, she was very kind to me, for instance, accepted that I, because I went abroad with my aunt quite a bit, so she brought me into it all quite a lot, much more than, say, her elder sister Margot, who wouldn't have been at all interested in the family, when the court that was considered important at all. No, Aunt Grace always thought the family was important, but that wasn't her life's work.
No.
But you see, it amazed Oxford that she had to give up and come back. She didn't have to give up and come back to look after my grandmother. There was absolutely no need for it. But she thought it was important. Because the mind was more important than anything.
And she was very fond of her mother as well.
Oh, they were all. Absolutely adored their mother. Absolutely adored her.
Can you
she was the important
that,
character in the family, because my grandfather was extremely quiet. I think he was a clever man. I know people who used to go and stay there used to say that they would all be arguing, like talking all at once, like all the Hadders did, terrifically fast. And if they came to an argument about some important matter or even unimportant matter, they would refer to grandfather, who was sitting quietly just listening and saying nothing, and he would come out with the answer promptly. He knew, you see.
But he was in the background.
But he was in the background. Whereas my grandmother was very much to the fore. But sat back, admiring her family. She thought there was nothing like them. Absolutely nothing like them. They were absolutely, all of them, perfect.
And of course it was a
and that was a help, you see, in a way, to be so much appreciated.
Yes. So really that gives her a sort of base in life, really, the family. And
oh,
she
yes.
Can launch
oh, very
off.
Much so. Very much so. Oh, yes, they very much had a base in the family. They all came back home whenever they could and did what they could. I mean, my uncle helped my elder aunt, not the man, the one that outlasted them all, Cotty Hadder, that I lived with in Cirencester. I mean, he had to help support her right to the end of his life.
Yeah.
Because she'd never earned, you see. She'd been at home and they had frankly little money.
Yes.
But they never worried about it, they never thought of it. My father, I remember, being furious when he read this book because Miss Denniker brings out that they were so poor. But you see, the Denikers were extremely well off. They were a banking family.
I see, so
you
that's
see?
Relative only to
and
them.
Only relative to them. But my father was amazed. It had never struck him that they were poor. Though, of course, they were frightfully poor.
They weren't self-conscious about money or
that. Not in the least. That didn't matter. You managed somehow. It wasn't an important thing in life at all.
Could I just ask you what... You must have known Miss Denicky quite well.
Oh, very well.
What sort of person was she? Because that would, in a way, help.
She was a charming person. She was... how can I describe her? Because she was different from us, because they really were very German. Although they were naturalised British, they lived in England for years, very musical. She was a large... person, but she was a very kind-hearted, rather, I suppose, sentimental underneath, like a lot of Germans are, you know, there's a hard side and a soft
yes.
side, and she adored my aunt, absolutely adored her, they all did.
Yes, why do you think? I mean, can you, what was the...
I think because she had this charisma. She did have a charisma, there's no getting about it. I mean, I drove about in Oxford in the war. Driving people. We lived in her house in Oxford after she died. She died
in
very young, suddenly.
Yeah.
In Fifield Road, actually. Fifield
Road.
The Denikers lived in Norham Gardens, but that was only just down the road.
Yes,
from
yes, it's all sort of
yes.
near the park.
Yes, yes, very yeah. near the park.
Mm.
And Aunt Grace's house belonged to the Denikers. And so when she died, they very kindly let us have it because my father had an accident and we had to move to be, he was retiring from Quedgeley where we lived. And he went up there really to be under Girdleston, who was head of the Wingfield Orthopaedic at that time. He couldn't do anything for him really, but anyhow, so we lived there. My mother died very suddenly after we got there, about a month after we got there. And so instead of doing war work, I had to be at home looking after my father, who was an invalid.
Yeah.
But I also had to do some war work, so I did a lot of driving all over England for WVS, which really meant from Oxford, driving lecturers to camps and
yes.
all that sort of thing, you see.
Yes.
And
so Miss Denicky was alive all that time?
Oh, yes.
She knew
oh, yes, they all
well.
Lived at Gunfield. Oh, I knew her before. You
did
see,
you
I'd been abroad with her and Aunt Grace together.
Really?
And Miss Skipworth, who was to do with NMH, vice principal of NMH. We all went climbing in Switzerland together.
What was it like going on holiday with your aunt? I mean, what were holidays with her like?
Oh, she was a tremendous... she was very keen on mountains. She climbed. She started climbing the Matterhorn when she was 40 or something. I mean, much later than most people. First woman to go up one side of the Matterhorn. Anything she took up, she took up. And like a lot of Oxford dons in those days, and Cambridge dons, they loved the mountains to get away from it. And she nearly always went. She did give me, after I left school, she gave me a choice. I could choose either to go to Italy and see the galleries and all that sort of thing, or I could go to Switzerland without the mountains, you see. And I can't help feeling she wasn't rather pleased when I chose the mountains. I'm not as academically inclined as my sisters would have been. They'd have preferred Italy, I think.
But she was pleased you chose
but she
the
was
mountains.
Pleased, yes. So I had two holidays with her, at least, in Switzerland.
And what was she like on holiday? Were you dragged about, sort of thing? And was she tremendously energetic or what, really? How would you...
Well, she organised it all. I did exactly what... But one did in those days, you see, when I was young, you wouldn't have thought of not. I mean, she bought the tickets and saw to everything, you know, and I didn't have any freedom in that way. But that's why I really was rather keen to do the mountains, which I knew I would love. But no, oh no.
And do you have visions of her striding ahead, sort of thing?
No. She was extremely considerate. I mean, they didn't do high things when I was there, because I'd never done any. We only did pass walks and things like that. And then they stayed on and climbed after I came home.
Oh, I see.
You see? But she loved just walking in the mountains. We stayed in quite simple hotels and out-of-the-way places because she wouldn't have any papers or letters sent on. It was a real holiday for her. She got away from it all while she was out there. And so we always stayed in rather remote spots.
I see, yes.
Where she wasn't likely to meet any of her other Oxford friends.
But was she energetic on holiday, really?
Yes. Yeah, she was an energetic person and funnily enough, because she wasn't really a very tough person, you wouldn't have thought. I mean, I don't think she'd been very strong when she was young, but she was much stronger than she looked. She looked rather, not frail exactly, but she was thin and tall. And
not a masculine type of woman at all, I mean.
No.
Not as
tough as the Denikis. Both the Denikis were pretty big, hefty women. But no, she wasn't. But I don't know how you describe her quite. She was.
Would she talk a lot while you were walking? And was she a great talker on
that day? No, not like that at all.
She was... Fond of the scenery, presumably.
Oh, yes, sort of very thing, interested in the people. She was always interested in people, wherever you went.
Yes. Talking the languages and everything.
Yes, and, she was very devoted to the guides, families, Swiss families. That, I mean, that's why she liked, we used to go out with presents for them and that sort of thing. We'd go and have tea in their house.
Because in those days, because Switzerland was a cheap place to go to.
Yes, and there weren't many British except real climbers. Yeah. It wasn't a tourist thing like it is now.
So she actually went often enough to know the guides' families and establish relations.
But she was that sort of person. Anybody she took up, they weren't just being used for the day. They were people she got to know. She talked to them, found out all about their families and their interest in life and what they did. And they absolutely adored her in the same way. It was her great interest in people, I think. She was fascinated by people. I mean, she'd be very interested in me and what I was going to do or not going
to
do.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, she took an interest... What was she like as an aunt, really? That's a rather broad question.
Oh, tremendously interested in us. But you see, so busy. Not like my mother's sisters, who we really saw a great deal more of because they were at home and country people. I mean, she came to us for Christmas nearly always. Otherwise, except when she took me abroad, we didn't see her because...
But nonetheless, you're aware
and
of
she
her
always,
interest,
oh,
didn't you?
Yes, and she always kept up on me. She wrote for our birthdays and Christmas. And oh, yes, there was a tremendous family interest in that way. I mean, they all wrote to each other quite a lot. See, there weren't telephones and things.
No, absolutely.
You see?
No.
You you didn't. You wrote letters. That's why these letters are so important now, because they're all vanishing, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. There won't be any.
And they all had such good handwritings, you know.
Did they? Yes.
And wrote so well. Such good English, of course.
Yes. So anyway, did you feel she was... Was she a favourite aunt, really, for you? I mean, that is...
I was very fond of her. I admired her, let's put it that way. I think I admired her more than the... I wasn't exactly afraid of her, but her mind was so much beyond us that we couldn't really keep up with her, you know. Mm. I mean...
Yes.
And yet she would always... not exactly come down to us, but be interested in us and what we were doing.
Yes, was she fun? I mean,
yes, she was. She was fun in the. I don't know how to put it quite. Not academic way isn't the right expression, but
whimsical. Would you say?
She didn't do practical jokes like my able aunts would have done. You know.
No.
And they were all for pulling our legs and teasing us and dressing up pretending to be somebody else. They didn't do that.
Mm. But she was witty. And
witty, yes. All the funny side of things.
Yes, yes, yes.
Rather possible to describe, really. So unlike anyone else. rather in a kind of sharp way. Not sharp way in the way of being unkind, but...
No, but incisive.
Yes.
Brisk almost.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, she's very rational.
She was so quick, you see. She spoke tremendously quickly. Tremendously quick. But she, and so did my uncle.
Yes.
See, my uncle marched up and down the room talking at 69 to the dozen. And the two of them would walk round the parks in the morning, ignoring everybody, you see, talking frightfully hard together.
They were very fond of each other.
They were very fond. Their minds worked very close together. Very close together, always.
Mm.
Oh, she was devoted to him.
And how did she talk, actually? You said she had a nice voice, but you were really talking in terms of singing then. I mean,
well, she had rather a light voice. I think it says in the book that when she had rather a high voice. I think they were mentioning when she took the chair at WR or something. It was rather a high voice. It was rather a high voice.
Speaking quickly.
And incisively. Clearly. Yes, incisively. Mm. Very clear mind, you see. She never hesitated for a word or bundled over things like most of us do. She just could express anything straight away. Very, very clearly and quickly.
In a Gloucestershire dialect?
No. I don't know whether she had one or two words. My uncle had this burr which sort of came out very occasionally. No. Aunt Grace might have had one word or something like that, but...
Not
all. No, oh no, not at all.
No.
Not at all. They none of them did. They had very pleasant voices.
Mm.
Educated, clear voices.
Because all this helps to see... to explain why she was such a success in the WI, doesn't it? Because she's got country interests.
Oh, yes.
She's keen on family life.
Yes.
She's interested in people.
Yes.
She's...
See, she came at a time when there was great poverty in the country. You see, my grandmother started, I suppose, almost the first, I think it was the first in England, sort of cottage industry at South Cerny, with teaching them all getting... wool for them to knit and selling the things for them to make a bit more money, and wrote all over that. I found letters from goodness knows who the other day that she'd written to. But Aunt Grace had that background, you see, that you didn't do it because they were poor, you did it because you were there and you happened to have a better brain or knew how to get about it. It wasn't really a case of money. They never had money to give to people, but they had brains to give to people, and they used them. And she felt that the war, in a sense, was a chance for the women to come forward and learn something through the WI and get people who knew more and they were educated, come and make use of their brains in that sort of way.
Mm.
And she was... always felt, right to the end of her days, as far as the WI were concerned, the important thing was the small villages. That was what it was for.
Mm.
And she never let it go to her head that the top...
You said, it's rather interesting what you said, that none of them knew that there were other interests that she had equally at heart. Did she then give the impression always of being very busy?
No, but she gave the impression of giving entire time to the one thing she was doing, like a lot of clever people can do, you know, or big people can do. She was great in that way. I mean, if she was on the WI, she was doing WI Matters entirely. And if she was Ministry of Munitions, she was doing that. Or
she wasn't always rushing around. She didn't feel she was in a hurry.
Oh, never. No. Never. Mm. No, she always had time for everybody.
That's a great gift.
Oh, great gift. Mm. Mm. Great gift. She wore herself out, I think, in the end, because she had always had time for everybody. And time for little things, like she loved her garden. And I mean, the very last notes and things I found on her desk, which was this one, which she left to me, were things about buying plants for the garden or something. Or somebody suggested she should get something or other.
I think one of your sisters said that when she went to see her, when she was actually on her deathbed in hospital, about 1940, wasn't it, that after they talked, she was obviously very ill, but after they talked, she drew under the bed clothes some money for her journey, and your sister, said, you know, this is just typical of her thoughtfulness about details.
Yes. I suppose that was Chris. She was nursing in London. I'd forgotten she had gone to see her, because I had to go up from Quedgeley to identify her. You see, she died so suddenly.
Mm.
I think Chris had been to see her just before she died.
I think it was Chris.
Yes, the nurse one. And she did. I remember her telling me that, yes. Mm. Oh, yes. Everything was thought of like that.
Yes.
She was rightfully generous because, she hadn't any money when she left. She'd only got money what she earned and what people had given her and lent her. I mean, most of the things in the house had been lent her by people, I discovered, by the time I sent them to the sale or something. They were all writing for them back. That's a bit of exaggeration. That was really, it wasn't her house or anything.
Yes.
But people were only too glad to. She had very good books and library, and she left them to all sorts of people.
What sort of presents did she give you? I mean, were they always suitable presents somehow? I mean, did you feel that she'd taken trouble?
Oh, enormous trouble. Enormous trouble. Everything she did, she took enormous trouble over. I can't remember much. She generally gave me money, I think, because she thought I needed it.
Probably right.
Save up to go away with her or something, you know? Or she gave me a holiday instead. It was that sort of thing, you see. And of course, people didn't give presents in the way they do now when we were young. I mean, presents were rather exceptional.
Yes, yes.
She would have brought us a box of chocolates for Christmas or something, I think.
Yes.
I don't think I've got many presents that she gave me, for instance, now.
What about her influence on your career and that sort of thing in your life? I mean, for instance, you mentioned you were in the WBS and so on in the war.
Yes, but I was the one that lived at home, so she had no influence on me in that way, because I had to. My parents were invalids one after the other.
I see.
And I had no other option but to stay at home, because my younger sisters were both working. But they had things they wanted to do. I was naturally country, so it was an obvious. And I was the eldest, and in those days the eldest stayed at home, you know. But she was quite concerned about me once or twice, you know. She realised. I mean, I hadn't got her brains. I hadn't got as many as my sisters actually either, so that I was the obvious one to be there, you see. And but she would have liked my younger sister Ray to have gone to university. She was rather cross that she wouldn't.
Yes.
But, you see, we had no money either, and Ray's one idea was to earn. And she couldn't wait till she could get to the university and all that. And there were no grants in those days, you see. You didn't get help like that.
Mm.
And she knew Aunt Grace couldn't afford to send her to university. I mean, she helped.
Yeah.
She helped. Well, they all helped with our schooling and things like that. We went to all these schools, but we got grants, you see.
Yeah, it's a whole thing
and
one tends to forget.
But you see, it's a completely different reversal of life since I was young. Mm. So you can hardly believe it. Mm. I mean, the wars have done all that.
Yes, yes.
But it was very hard.
The family becomes doubly important for that reason.
Yes, but you see, people in our position were expected to be educated and expected to hold a certain position and expected to employ people, even whether you hadn't any money.
Mm. Yes.
You see, and you quite often possessed possessions. I mean, we've got an enormous amount of furniture, but practically no money, except what we've happened to have earned. And if you might sell a bit to help out, but that's not going to keep you living on it.
Yes.
Yes. People don't realise, no, I don't think.
I understand. You actually remember your grandmother, do you?
Oh, very well.
Do you really?
Very well, yes. She was an old lady when I knew her, of course, and she was an invalid. I never knew quite why she was an invalid, but she looked very delicate. And of course, we were invalids and Rob. And she sat, you know, in a long chair with a rag over her, and she had curls down here and a mop cap. But you see, it went to the next. She thought I was marvellous if I could put two or three words together and make a word. We had these sort of jigsaw things you did, you know, and you made, or letters in a box, and you, if you could make a word, and we only were taken in for a short time with her. But if you could spell out cat when you were six or something, she thought you were absolutely the cat's whiskers.
Was she like Grace at all, do you think? Did you feel there was a resemblance there at all?
Oh, yes. I think they were all rather alike. They had that rather fine, drawn, very pale, rather delicate look, really, all of them. But they weren't delicate. They were pretty tough. The ones that survived, of course...
Yes.
You see, people died of things. You see, Uncle Gerald that died, he would have, somebody told me he would have been more brilliant than any of them. He'd done
quite
well
as
a doctor at St. Mary's. But he got TB, you see.
Mm.
He was terribly ill. I found all sorts of letters. He went out to Australia for his health. They travelled, you know, went on by sea voyage and things. But he died down in Penzance with his elder sister in the end. They couldn't save him.
Mm.
Nothing could save him.
Mm. What, when they're all together then, say at Christmas or in the family group with your grandmother there, what would these terrific conversations be about, really? Can you?
Oh, it was quite beyond me. I couldn't tell you that.
And was it literally?
I mean,
talk
I wasn't there
literature?
With them all. I was never there with them all, you see.
But
my mother, well, I mean, they would discuss the merits of different poets or...
Yes, there was quite a lot of literary.
Just all entirely.
Artistic
entirely.
Talk, yes.
Yes, not so much artistic as musical or literary.
Yes, and what sort of games, family games, presumably, about sort of rather intellectual family games? Sort of
yes, they were keen on games. They were very keen on any sort of ball game. They played, see, Uncle Harry was had quite a good reputation for squash. No, not squash, fives. Fives, I've got little cups here of his from fives. Mm. Aunt Grace played tennis, but didn't have much time for it. Her father's a good tennis player. But they also played a lot of card games.
Yes.
They're very keen on cards, with the house is full of cards. And not for betting, of course. That never came into the ilk in those days. And nobody played betting for cards unless you were in a casino or somewhere.
Mm.
And I've got a lot of old games that belong to them, like Spillikins and backgammon and.
Yes, and I imagine
like
there'd
that,
be a lot of
see?
Those sort of games which require a knowledge of words and
yes,
and of,
yes.
Things that you play in a family circle.
Well, it was more because you must remember there was no television, no wireless. You read, or you played games to keep your brains going, and also to make family interests. I think. They played in the evenings, you see, when it was perhaps too dark to read much.
Yes, I'm
you
sure
see,
that's
they only
right.
had lamps and candles.
Because all this does lie behind her literary interest too, of course, doesn't it?
Yes, I think, you see, they were both very literary minded, my grandmother and grandfather, and I think they'd inherited it, you know. There was a lot behind them if well educated. You see, they were all either parsons or diplomats or something of that sort, but they all had highly educated.
And to some extent, I suppose, thrown in on themselves in a country village or country community.
Yes, because they couldn't get about very far.
Yes, and there are...
They only had a pony trap or something. No, they used to hire a carriage and drive out to see people occasionally, but I think that wasn't very often.
Yes. So they
and they would ride, you see. My grandfather, of course, had a pony and rode. Around the other parishes and would ride into Cirencester for meetings and things like that.
Mm.
But the even the young girls certainly didn't. But you see, they left. They went to schools. I don't think my eldest aunt did. I think they were just educated at home. I shouldn't think they had a governess. I think my grandpa and grandmother educated them. Mm. I don't think they went to school at all, as far as I know. Aunt Grace did, but then she was so much younger that by that time yes. they could help, you see. Mm. And she went to a little dame school near Stroud, Brownshill. And then she went...
she went to a high school.
She went to Cheltenham for a short yes. time, Cheltenham Ladies College.
Oh, yes.
But
yes.
she went to Truro.
Yes, that's right. Really. Yes. She was very much influenced by a suffragist mistress there.
Yes, yes. And you see, my grandmother came from Cornwall.
Yes.
And her brother, I think it was Archdeacon of Truro. They were a well-known family down there and all related to the Edgecombe family and that lot. Mm. So that there were a lot of relations all connected down there because yes. they all married each other because they didn't move very far, you see.
Yes, yes.
They all married cousins and things, you see. Even yes. my oldest aunt married her first cousin.
Yes, yes.
Because she'd gone down to...
The family is much more important generally, not just in Grace's
well, they
did, family.
Well, they simply didn't get around, you see. That was the point. Mm. They couldn't. But mm. they went... the older ones went to Germany. I don't know how they got to Germany. Mm. But I found some wonderful letters from mm. my aunt Cottage, to her mother, written from did Germany.
You
know?
Yes, did you?
So he wrote good letters, yeah. most awfully
well,
clear.
Absolutely, yeah.
Interested in everything, never missed anything.
What about politics, Miss Hadder? I mean, they're liberals, really, are they, as a family, would you say?
No, I wouldn't know at all.
It's difficult
politics
to say,
never came into it
yeah.
at all. I suppose they... must have voted for something.
Mm. And all this enthusiasm for education in a country context rather suggests liberalism, but I just don't know.
Yes, but you see, politics weren't important.
Yes.
Politics weren't the point of the thing at all.
Yes.
It wasn't political in any sort of way.
Yes.
And none of us have been brought up politically minded because being clergy family, you can't take sides about things. That's the way we were brought up, you see.
Mm.
And I think they were the same.
Mm.
That you were friended everybody in the village. And
mm.
therefore you couldn't possibly, I mean, you made up your own mind who you were going to vote for, but it was most likely was depending on who was leading at that moment and whether you liked them, thought they were good enough to be in Parliament. I wouldn't have said they were liberals as a family.
And certainly not obviously so. I mean, it was...
Certainly not obviously so. No, I suppose they were conservative if they were anything.
Mm. Mm.
But
it wasn't, politics weren't
oh
important.
Oh, no,
in
no, never, never.
Setup.
It was never
yeah.
discussed at all.
Yes, no,
that wasn't important.
Yes, yes.
It was what was behind politics and what was behind religion that was important.
Yes, about religion, really. I mean, religion doesn't seem to have been on the surface much either.
Oh, no.
Is that
oh, no.
Right?
No, see, they nobody ever made them think in any one particular line. They were free to think exactly what they wanted, and therefore they explored. I mean, Aunt Grace explored all kinds of religions, but at root bottom she was Church of England, and she was a very great believer. They were all believers, you'd say that, and it was the back of their whatever they did, really.
But they wouldn't talk about it a lot.
Oh no, oh no, oh no, they didn't think that would do any good. Well, what you did was what you did. That was where it showed, you see.
So you feel that there was a sort of religious driving power behind,
oh, I do.
In a way, but
oh,
it wasn't
I do.
Something that was talked about.
No,
lot, really,
not at all.
Mm.
But you got the values from it. Perhaps that's the right word.
Mm.
The values from it, and also the principles,
mm.
which made you do things that were unselfish, and it was important that you thought of other people first and all that sort of thing.
Yes, do you feel, I'm looking back, do you feel that there was a lot of discipline, self-discipline around in Grace?
Oh, yes, I think so.
Brothers and sisters, I mean...
I think so.
Do you feel that they were rather tightly self...
Yes, I think they were.
...regulated in a
yes,
way?
Yes, I think they were.
Mm.
But mm. not... don't mistake that for rigidity or narrowness in any way. I mean, they were the most open-minded people for ideas that I've ever come across. I haven't met anybody since them
that
had such an open mind to what was going on. but they would balance it against how they'd found life and how they'd been brought up, which they'd never found to fail them, you see.
Yes.
That was the point, yes. You see.
Was Grace very inquisitive with you? Would she ask you lots of questions and things? Was she always sort of interested in what you'd been doing?
Yes. Mm. Oh, yes, very much so.
Mm. So you feel she was always, at any moment, she was always taking things in?
Oh, always. Mm. Always taking things in.
Mm.
They all were. They all were. In their different ways. But she was more interested in all of us, I think, than the others were. The others had their own, the eldest one was married. And,
of course, Sir Henry had very wide interests.
Well, yes, he was marvellously interested in us when he had time.
He was such a frightfully
busy person.
Yeah.
Well, so was Aunt Grace, but she was a bit freer than he was, you see. Mm. After all, he had the university and he had an awful lot, an awful lot.
Mm. And
but he still had time to write to us. He and my father wrote a lot to each other. Not so much to the children, of course, but I stayed with him in Sheffield when he was Vice Chancellor several times. And he would take the trouble when I was there to give me a good time. I mean, to take me around things that he thought. I mean, we were all brought up to know exactly what was going on around us. I mean, at home, my father would take us all around the wagon works in Gloucester and the match factories and things from when we could stand almost.
Mm.
We had to know what was going on in the place.
Mm.
And Uncle Harry took me all around all the steelworks in Sheffield, I remember.
Does that fit with Grace's interest in crafts, really, which is obviously one of the main things in the WR?
Yes, she didn't do any crafts herself, mind you. She was absolutely hopeless with her hands. She couldn't sew a button on. But if she thought you were good at crafts, then you must do that. If you were good at anything, you must do it. That was your gift, and you must make the very most of it. And it didn't matter what it was you could do. If you were cooking, you would cook very well. You see, it didn't matter to her. There was no particular virtue in being frightfully clever at academic things. It just was you happened to have that gift. Mm. But it was equally important if you were a good cook. Well, that was just as important as far as she was concerned.
So and she didn't actually do things herself at all?
No,
really. And of course, she presumably didn't have to cook or anything.
She didn't have to. She didn't have to do anything like that. Mm. She always had people to do that. And she wouldn't have had a moment to.
Mm.
She
would enter into other people's interests.
She would be very interested in whatever they were doing, whoever it was.
Mm.
All the time she was principal home student in Oxford, you'd find her taking some old person out for a drive because somebody who'd worked for her or something, or garage's wife or something. Because she thought she was dull or wanted a bit of an outing or nobody had bothered to take her out.
What about servants, the servants in the household? I mean, was she good with them?
Oh, yes. She was good with everybody. They all adored her. They'd do anything for her. Because she was such fun in a sort of way. I mean, she was bright. She was cheerful and always, life was marvellous, you see. So everybody else felt it was marvellous. Mm.
She had some infection.
You had so little time to see so much of the world and all the things that were in it. There wasn't a minute to waste. she made everybody feel like that.
And you noticed that even when you were going abroad, for instance?
Oh, yes. So it didn't matter whether you were abroad or at home or where you were. It was all just equally interesting as far as she was concerned.
So you never felt, or you never had the impression she got depressed, or that she wasn't one of those up-and-down people at all?
No, I think she had. I think she found the burden of things at times very much. But she would never have let you know.
Mm.
Mm. I couldn't possibly imagine her moaning to anybody about anything.
No.
But, if you do take an enormous interest in other people, they are inclined to throw their wares onto you.
Yes.
And after a bit, it's extremely tiring.
Mm.
But you see, she had a way of getting away from it, you know. She was always very much a private person as well.
Yes, I wanted to ask, because I made a note actually about...
really get very close to her.
Yes, that's right. I think it's in the Deneke thing. She had many friends, but few intimates, I think.
That's quite true.
I mean, that's surprising, that I, really, well, I think, what you say.
Well, you see, I think that ran through all the family. You see, the old aunt that I lived with was rather different, and yet she was the same.
Constance,
yeah. Yes. They called her Cotty. Mm. She had she knew absolutely everybody in Cirencester, and they all knew her. She knew all about them and all their relatives and everything to do with them, and she knew the whole lot. But again, I would say she had practically no what I'd call real friends. Not because she couldn't have had them if she wanted, but she didn't want them. You see, in a way, they all liked to be private people. She liked going out, and Aunt Cotty was tremendously socially minded. She joined in absolutely everything was going on, drama clubs and the lot. But she liked to come home and be on her own then. And in a funny sort of way, I think they were all perhaps like this. They didn't like people who made demands on them. Because, not from any unkindness, but because they really hadn't got time for only one person.
Mm. And they had a centre in themselves. In a way, they weren't self-centred, but they were self-dependent.
Oh, yes, very self-dependent. Mm. And they had great resources in themselves, tremendous resources, all of them.
So they were never bored on their own? Or never?
Oh, never bored. For a minute. I can't imagine any of them ever being bored for one single minute. That didn't enter their heads.
But, of course, this wouldn't apply, this thing about many friends but few intimates, that wouldn't apply within the family, would it? That is, Grace had an intimate in her brother Henry, didn't she?
Yes, she did. Really? I would have said that he was much her closest friend, apart from her mother. I think they were very close, she and her mother and her brother. I think they were all... they were really more close to each other when necessary than they were to any outsiders. I'd say that. Though I don't think they...
about Cotty?
Very often confided in anybody. Mm. You see, I think Grace was very fond of all the Deneke family. She was extremely fond of old Mrs. Deneke, who I just remember.
Mm.
And it was really a very close friend of Lena's, more so than Margot, because she wasn't so musical. And of course they did such a lot together with Oxford and W. I did with Somerville together.
Of course you may get a sort of illusion, because it may be that the really close relationships which Grace had would be with older people who you wouldn't have known or seen so much.
Well, I think they were. She wrote to me after Mrs. Deneke died and was obviously terribly upset.
Mm.
She felt that all the people she cared about were going. Now, that was, you see, an unusual letter from her.
Mm.
Very low she was. But you see, she didn't need it because the young people adored her. She'd always got more people coming on than she could cope with, really.
Yes. It's a very interesting picture you're creating of her, which agrees with what I've been told, but fills it out, you know.
Well, they're very, I shouldn't say this because they're my family. They just are an unusual family. That lot were very unusual.
Mm. Mm.
And I've never met anybody quite like them, really.
What do you feel about Oxford and its importance to Grace? I mean, did you always hear her talking a lot about Oxford?
Oh, yes. She thought a lot of Oxford.
Mm. Mm.
Oh, yes. I think it was the centre of her world, really, Oxford.
Mm. Mm.
And my uncle's
surprising if it wasn't, really, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes. She loved Oxford. Oxford was her soulmate, so to speak, and Uncle Harry's. They were both very...
You see, one of the interesting things that I've come across is this, that in the generation between the wars, after women get the vote, but before they're, in a sense, fully accepted, as they are becoming now, they very often survive through working in pairs. or teens, in a way. Mm. And one of the pairs, you see, that's very important in the WI is Lady Denman and Grace Haddo. Between them, they run the WI between the wars, and there are later examples I could quote.
Yes.
And I wondered whether you ever met Lady Denman or ever had any recollection of that.
No, I don't think I ever met Lady Denman.
Mm.
You see, she was appointed chairman after Aunt Grace started the WI, really.
Mm. Mm.
But you see, she wouldn't have had the time or the money or the position to be the chairman, so she was clever in getting Lady Denman. Because she was really the brains behind it.
Yes, that's where the pair works.
And
so
this
well.
Is where a lot of people don't realise that, you see. I think Lady Denman gets a lot of, well, quite right, kudos. But the present generation doesn't know that Aunt Grace was really the moving spirit behind the whole thing. She got it started, and she made these simple rules, which were lasted ever since. I mean, they've altered one slightly now, but it wasn't any need to alter it really, to my mind,
Did you actually ever go to any WI?
Yes, I went to. Yeah, I went to hear her take the chair on one occasion. I see in the book she said she did it twice. I'd forgotten that. Once at Queen's Hall, once certainly Albert Hall I went to.
Mm.
And it brought the house down. I mean, she was the most wonderful chairman. Wonderful chairman.
How, really?
I can't tell you quite, because she had this lovely sense of humour. She brought everybody into it, even if it was a huge Albert Hall. They all came alive. And they all felt they were in it. I remember her saying to me that the great thing about, you must remember when you're taking a chair, is that you notice the little people at the back who are not going to say anything. They're the ones that have got to be brought in, and you've got to find out what they think, because they're just important. And she had this with the Hugo Albert Hall, you see.
An extraordinary gift, that is.
It was a wonderful gift.
Mm.
But again, you see, it was her understanding of human nature. She was never the least bit swayed by wealth or riches or position. Or she admired talent enormously, and if you got there because of that, or for any reason, I mean, she admired people as they were. But that made no impression on her, whatever, unless they were genuine sort of people.
Because that would make it so easy to get on in the WI, because she could find a talent in everybody.
Oh, yes,
really,
she did, and she looked for it, you see, and brought it out.
Yes, and so they'd...
This was why she was such an inspiring leader, really. But she was ready to hand over at a moment's notice, because she would never have wanted to hold on to anything from any point of view, because she felt her job in life was perhaps on the next thing, you see.
So she was quite good at delegating, was she? She could
very, very good at delegating.
Start things off and leave.
Very good at delegating.
Mm. Mm.
Oh, yes, that's why she had all these umpteen things running at the same time. But she couldn't have done them if she was all the only person in them.
Mm.
But she knew what was going on, all right. And if she came into a thing, you see, you would soon have it put straight. She would listen, you see, and they'd been chatting for half an hour about something or other, and she would sort it out in about 5 seconds.
Supposing you personally were in trouble in some way or another, or people you knew were in trouble, was she the sort of person you'd go to?
No, I don't think so. Not unless it was somebody directly connected with her. But mind you, I didn't see an awful lot of her from that, but I wouldn't have seen enough of her to do that.
Mm.
What
about Cotty and your father? Would they have gone to her?
No. Mm. They never went to each other about things. I think they went to their grandmother.
So this privacy...
But my father and my mother were very close, you see. They had each other. That was different. Mm. They didn't need the others.
Mm.
But they wrote to each other when they were... if it was a family bereavement or money troubles, something like that. Very much so.
But even so, would you say there was quite a lot of privacy within the family as well, as against the world in general?
Oh, I think so.
They weren't on top of each other.
No, they weren't on top of each other. And I think they inherited a thing which happened, I think, very much in that generation, which I just remember enough of to know, and that is that, you see, there were very small communities, and these... Most people had big families, and they all lived at home. So there was a great deal of undercurrent jealousy. And so what you had, I don't think this applied very much to the Haddows, but I've known it in other families, and I think it must have affected them to a slight extent. For instance, I think it did with my Aunt Cotty, who I think kept things tremendously close, like a magpie, because that was the only thing she had. She knew the other thought nothing of her, as far as brain was concerned. You see, it was rather hard lines, really. I mean, honestly, they treated her as if she hardly got out the egg. And she was older than them. But they talked round her and over her as if she didn't exist. So it made them a little bit close about things, I think, in some ways.
Well, when you say, I think you use the word jealousy, and what exactly do you mean by that? Do you mean that they're a bit competitive with each other?
I wasn't really thinking so much of the Haddows. I was thinking of a lot of other families of that generation. I think it made them, yes, I think if the parents made more of one than the other.
I see.
You see?
Yes.
And some people had more talents than others. Mm. Some girls were better looking than others.
Yes, I see.
The boys got everything, the girls got nothing.
Yes.
You see, until the Haddows started to alteration.
The Haddows were very unusual in that.
They were, you see, they were miles ahead of their time, so it didn't affect them in the same way.
No, I understand.
But it affected other people, and in a sense, they must have had not a slight feeling, perhaps, of the same thing occasionally, I think, with the two elder aunts.
Yes, what
I don't think it
Grace
happened with Grace,
Poppy,
really.
How did they hit it off? Because they must have seen a lot of each other.
No, they didn't see a lot of each other, except for the years. How long was she at home? Only a year or something.
Well, they were both at Cirencester for a time, weren't they?
Yes, they were for a time. Well, that's when I think she thought Aunt Cotty was the housekeeper and you'd get on with the house, and they had very little in common.
Didn't they really?
Very little.
Because I would have thought, you see, that doesn't quite fit with the way Grace gets on with everyone in the WI, because she can find something.
She would find something. But you see, she didn't have to with her own sister. She'd known her whole life.
I see.
Do you see what I mean?
No,
she didn't have to do anything kind to her.
No.
And Aunt Cotty had all her own friends in Cirencester, you see.
Yes.
I mean, she was very much a person. She'd always been there, and she was one at home at South Cerny before, you see.
Yes, I see.
I mean, she'd had all the brunt of it, really, let's face it. But she liked being out and about, too, so that she was quite glad to have Aunt Grace sitting with Granny.
I have a feeling that somebody said, I can't remember who, that in a way, Cotty does in Cirencester what Grace does in the nation as a whole. That is, Cotty's a sort of local...
Well, you're quite right there. As far as practical things are concerned, yes. You see, she was the first woman guardian, Cotty had her, in Cirencester. She was on the hospital committee for goodness knows how long. She was, she was WI secretary for years. She was group secretary for 30 years. Conservative women's conservative for 30 years or something. I mean,
she's got all sorts of things going on in her life at a slightly lower level.
Yes, I've been giving all things, collecting things of hers for the local WI Jubilee, which they've just had.
Did you ever go with Grace to a local WI meeting?
Yes, I think I did round Oxford. I think she was still attached to Elstree or somewhere where the Buckens
lived.
Elsfield. I think I went out there with her once. Yes, to the Tweeds Mills.
Yes, that's right.
I did. They were great friends with there.
Yeah.
And she stayed with them in Canada when he was governor.
I only remember.
I wasn't at Oxford myself. I only went up. I very rarely stayed with her in Oxford, because she was so busy in term time, and so was I. I couldn't leave home, you see, really. When my brother was at Oriel, that's when I went up for doing do's at Oriel, and I perhaps stayed with Aunt Grace for a night or two. Or when he rowed for Oriel, and when he was rowing, I would go up and watch him, you see, and stay with her for a day or two. She was very good at having us up for that sort of thing, and always made time for us, you see. She would then cancel everything, or made sure those 2 days were free.
Because what would you do then? Would she take you on the river or what? I mean.
Oh well, we went to watch the racing. You see, you had a boat, an Oriel boat in those days, and you sat on the boat and watched the racing. You see bumps and things, I watched the wind for a dance or something. But we only stayed we went to the Oriel Ball one year, I remember, and then we stayed overnight with her. And she invited people and put them all up for us. And, oh, yes.
So she really took travel.
Oh, she took a lot of travel. She got, I mean, those days we used to come out.
Yes,
no,
well,
I,
course,
I came out. I don't think anybody else.
Really,
my family
your hair
out.
Went up at that stage.
I came out, my hair went up. She took me to London and got me dresses and things for it. Oh,
really?
Yes.
What about dress, actually, Miss Hannah? What did she look like in dress? What sort of dress?
She dressed
did
rather
she
old fashioned, rather long. Well, they were long skirts, of course, but. Yes, rather sort of, well, they'd come into fashion now, sort of flowing garments, rather.
Mm.
Unless she was abroad, when she wore plus fours and coats.
Practical things, yes.
Practical things, oh
yes.
Yes, stockings and coats.
But business-like clothing, really.
Yes, well, yes, but they didn't wear business-like clothing in those days, you know.
No.
Large hats and floppy hats, but their bicycles all over the place, long for anybody else. Other women were allowed to bicycle, you see, they... They all had bicycles and went off. There were no inhibitions in the family. That's why they were extraordinary ahead of their time in that way.
Yes, yes. I wonder where that comes from originally. I mean, it's curious, isn't it?
I think they always had been. I think they'd, I think the family had, you see, it wasn't a, like an old aristocratic family which had a house. We never had a house because they were always servants of the crown. They were either army, diplomats or clergy. They were never in business. That's why there was no money, because you had a salary and you, when you died, that was the end of that. But you acquired things all over the world. But they were all in India and
so they're very
over
much
the place,
a middle class
see.
Family, very middle class.
Yes, I suppose you'd call it middle class
middle
in
class.
Those days. But yes, yes, they were. They were related to a lot of Scottish noblemen, though, that sort of thing. You know, they were rather... What you'd call higher middle class, I suppose.
Yes.
I mean, this drink water, you see, he's related to the Mintos. They all came into it. They've all related to
it. How do they have an attitude to the aristocracy at all, or to aristocrats?
Oh, no,
I
don't think
they
came into it at all. There was no feeling of anti-anything.
No.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You took everybody perfectly naturally.
Yes, I see.
Didn't matter who they were.
Of course, they're Anglican anyway, so they wouldn't have a non-conformist sort of edge to them.
No, they were very Scottish, mind you, in the background.
Were they?
Oh, yes. They came from St. Andrews originally.
I see. So
you
that
see
still
my,
lingers on.
The first one of any importance was Principal St. Andrews University. I mean, our coat farms and things are still there.
Mm.
And his son was Professor of Hebrew in about 1701 or something.
So that you feel the Scottish
still
mattered.
They were all academic all the way through. It was quite a strong Scottish line. They didn't come down till my great grandfather came to Hazeley.
Yes,
before that they were in Scotland. You see.
Yes, I see. Were they
or
really
either
is?
Douglas
so that's
or
not all that
Andrews.
Far back. That's her
great grandfather sort of thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
It's
oh,
not
yes.
all that far back.
No, it isn't. That's where the Headers came from. But you see, the Cornishes came from Cornwall.
Yes, and
they're
linked related with the gentry in various
ways.
Oh,
very
ways,
much.
They're
all very much gentry.
Yes, so it's really, very, really upper middle class. If
yes,
anything,
I suppose you'd call it
educated
that. I don't think we ever
class.
Think about it. You know,
no,
doesn't.
No.
In those days, it didn't come in.
No.
Really. It was mostly through the women. They married these families, you see, and then of course they lost the name, but.
Because that would rather fit with all the enthusiasm for education, wouldn't it, as well?
Education's gone right through from far as one can look back.
Mm. Because the Scots, there's a very strong Scottish tradition of education.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
So that would fit rather.
Oh, yes. I think this is where it came from.
Yes. Yes.
And the Scots are not very, are pretty open-minded about things, you know. They've got a rather... brusque outlook
especially
about
if they
life.
Come south.
Yes, yes.
And there's not that narrow Presbyterian sort of
no, and I don't think
at all.
That ever was quite our lot, quite.
Mm. The
I think they travelled too much to have that sort of narrow outlook, really.
Yes, it seems to me they had the best of all possible worlds.
A lot of the cousins and people, my grandfather's cousins, they were all... missionaries abroad, original ones, you know, started up things all over the place. That's in the way my brother inherited it. You see, it's extraordinary how it runs right through.
Yes, in a way, a lot of this enthusiasm for education would, in an earlier generation, have been a missionary.
Well, it would, you see. Yeah, well, yes, and it's gone right through.
Your sisters.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. my brother.
Yes.
You see, it's well, it was where you educated people and opened them up. It was the only education they had, of course.
Yes.
Like it was in England originally.
Getting back to that meeting in the Albert Hall, of course, another thing that makes her a good chairman is tact, really, isn't it? She's a very tact. She's got a lot of tact.
Oh yes, lots of tact.
The difficulties of
but that comes that, also from caring, I think, really, caring about people, not just because you don't want to hurt their feelings, but because you understand why their feelings are hurt.
You're sensitive to personal.
Very sensitive. Very sensitive.
And you've got your antennae up all
Yes.
Yes.
But at the same time, they never made it personal. They never got hurt feelings or anything like people seem to.
That no sulking or anything like that.
Oh, no, it didn't enter their heads.
No. It sounds to me, actually, it sounds rather patronising to say this, but they're part of a splendid English middle class, which is not written about enough, I think.
Well, I think there were an awful lot of fairly ordinary people like that.
Yes.
You're quite right, there were.
Yes. I mean,
you see, the thing was, all that lot had very little money, and therefore they couldn't make a splash, and where they went alone. They just went quietly on doing things in their own place, but they were the backbone of original education, really, because they had to come through the clergy.
Yes.
You see, they were the educators.
Yes, of course, particularly in country areas.
Well, yes, you see, Ebrington, this village at the Cotswolds, you may have been up there, which my grandfather, great-grandfather and grandfather were both vicar and curate there. And Ebrington got out a book on Ebrington last year for their jubilee. And there's quite a lot about my great-grandfather and my grandfather there.
Yes.
And you see, he started up the school there and did a tremendous lot in the tremendous poverty when the Enclosure Act came in and people hadn't got their own bit of land and their own animals, you see. And they were personally frightfully concerned about that. I think this concern for people goes through all the Haddos.
Yes.
Really.
Yes. And it's not any particular variant of religion, is it? They're not evangelical particularly, are they? Or Christian socialist or anything?
Oh, no. No, you see, politics don't come into it.
No.
Except from that point of view.
And they're not high church. They're sort of middle of the road.
No, my father
Anglican,
was rather high church. But then he was at the Oxford group. Not group. The Oxford, it wasn't called group, was it?
The Oxford Movement.
Oxford Movement. You see, he was up at Oxford, my father, at that time.
Yes.
And so we were all what you might call rather high church compared.
Yes.
But no, my grandfather wouldn't have been because there wasn't any then, you see.
Yes.
It was a sort of middle of the road evangelical
mixture.
Yes, but they weren't sort of tub thumping evangelicals. Their religion was very quiet, very much prayer book. But you practice what you preached, I think, doesn't sound rather pious that, but this is not do with me, I can.
No.
And this goes right through what they all do, really.
Do you, in a way, Grace was an unpractical person with her hands.
Oh, very unpractical.
But presumably practical in another dimension. That is, practical in as a person of affairs.
Yes.
So to speak.
Yes. Very. I mean, she understood her own business affairs and was very helpful if one needed help in that sort of way. And very methodical, very tidy.
Was she? Because you must have known about this.
Oh, yes.
As her executor, you'd
everything was left. I mean, I think she must have known that. You see, she prepared everything before she went. She'd had two big tours, you know. She went to... She first of all went, I think it's first, didn't she? She went to Australia on this. She was the only woman amongst all the international
party. Yes.
And she'd already booked for doing a whole lot of tutorial things and lectures in America. So she had to go from one to the other, and this is what killed her, you see. It was much too much. And then underneath, she was terribly worried about the war coming up because she knew so many Germans and Austrians, and they were great friends of hers, all these people she'd met abroad. And the whole thing was an absolute nightmare to her, and I think she was frightfully worried about it. But whether she thought she would survive or not, I don't know, but everything had been left in apple pile, and I've done seven lots of consecutorships, so I should know. And there was nothing but to follow the rules, what she'd written down. Everything left.
Had it all been written down quite recently, do you think?
Before she started on this tour.
I see,
and she died as soon as she got back, fortnight after she got back, you know.
did you actually see her before she died?
No. No, I didn't. It was a tremendous shock to us because she'd just come. She was still in London. And that's why she died in London, you see. But she had Lord Dawson of Penn, you know, the Queen's man who were there in those days, went to see her. And his opinion was he'd never seen anybody so exhausted. She was absolutely worn out. Had no, she picked up this streptococcal, she had rather a weak throat always. And she got a violent infection and could not throw it off. She hadn't got strength. She was too exhausted.
How did you know that she was very worried about the international situation? Did she talk a lot about it?
Yes, and there are various letters and things of hers that I found. And people who wrote when she after she died, you see. Oh, no, I think I knew her. I think I was close enough to her to know that she was feeling it very much.
Well,
I mean, it really hadn't started, but
she was, knew it was.
Oh, yes, and she was so in with it. See, she was in with it all. She'd been through the First World War in Minster Munitions, and she was very much in with all the high up people.
So she had a sense the
atmosphere. So well, she would know what they thought, you see. She wouldn't tell you, but she knew a lot more than most people did about what was going on. Extraordinary.
What sort of relationship did she have with your father? You said your father and your mother really were strongly together.
Well, because we were a very close family again, you see, and also because she was away such a lot.
Yes.
But she was very fond of my father. They were the two youngest, you see. But my father... Well, he wasn't a very strong man, and he was occupied with his family and his parish.
So it wasn't the major thing was Henry, really.
The major thing was Henry. Nobody had got her brain like Henry, you see. He was the one. Because they worked so closely together. But Oxford people were extraordinary. And I used to drive about in the war, you see.